From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of May 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the 22-hour trading day is tumbling through the commodity exchange systems. Citizens of California will vote on a labeling law this November related to genetically altered agricultural products, and the U.S. hard red winter wheat tours reported the average yield in Kansas to be a record breaker, at least over the last decade. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. And then, as we close out our program today, we'll talk with Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey and take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for Illinois and the Midwest. And it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production, of course, of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed. The contracts in the wheat pit for lower for the day. 603¾ was the settlement price in the lead option May, down 4.5 cents. July at 609½, down 6. That's your harvest month futures. September at 624¼, down 7¼. The hard red in Kansas City finished down 6 cents at $6.27. Back in Chicago from the corn pit, May futures were 11½ cents higher on the day to settle at $6.62¼. July at 620¼, up 5¾. Then the September came 2¼ lower, 535¼. The settlement price, December futures in the corn pit at 524¼, down 5¼. And the March at 536, down 5¼. May futures 544½, down 5¼ on the day. Next year's July at 553, down 5½. And December 2013 in the corn pit at $5.35, down 4½ cents. May soybeans 6¼ cents higher at $14.75. July at 14.78¼, up 4¾. The August at 14.58¼, up 5¾. September futures 1¾ cents lower, 13.98¾. And then November beans down 1 at 13.66¾. Now the January, 13.62¾, a half cent higher on the day. Bean meal up 6.90. Bean oil down 50 cents. Live cattle futures finished the August at 1.18.50. A nickel lower. The August feeders at 158.10, up 87½ cents. And June lean hogs at 83.72½, down $1.20. Back in just a moment. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. June crude oil futures, $98.51 a barrel. That's $4.02 lower for the day for the June crude oil futures. Ethanol at $2.20¼¢, 0.4¢ higher. Natural gas at $2.28¢. That's a nickel and 0.4¢ lower. Heating oil or diesel fuel down 7½¢ at $3.10. And the gold futures on the day at $1,644.70 an ounce, up $10.50. The dollar at 79.49. That's up 0.27. The CRB index at 297.15. Down 4.3 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. For the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, a chance of showers, a few thunderstorms will be possible. Those will come after 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Partly sunny, a high of 83 degrees with a south-southwest wind at 11 miles an hour, gusting to 15. Chance of precipitation at 40% across the area. Tonight, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, a low of 65. 30% rainfall tomorrow and a high of 84. Saturday, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms again. 63 degrees on Saturday evening. Sunday, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, and 84. Sunday night, showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, a low of 62. Showers and thunderstorms on Monday and cloudy and 76. Chance of precipitation set there at 60%. That's the same as Sunday night, by the way. And then on Monday evening, chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, and a low of 54 degrees. Tuesday should show us partly sunny skies, a high of 72 degrees. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy and 51. And then Wednesday, back to the showers, partly sunny. Then later in the afternoon, and a high of 67 Wednesday night, partly cloudy and 48. And on Thursday, sunny with a high near 68 degrees. We'll have a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey and the Prairie Research Institute.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. On the phone line from West Lafayette, Indiana, is Mike Zuzalome at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Todd.
How are you?
Hey, doing great. Thank you. Sorry, another line was coming in. I think it beat me out there for a minute.
Oh, is that what happens? That's okay. Well, that means you're busy, and that's always a good thing. Tell me about this marketplace today, and then for the week, because there's some interesting things happening.
For today, I think today was one of those textbook trades, and this week was one of those textbook trades, Todd, where you have this headline risk starting to develop, and headline meaning news headlines. In the outside markets, you're getting weaker and weaker and weaker macroeconomic fundamental data, and that's starting to play out in the charts and in the fundamentals, and so that by the time we got to the end of the week, keep in mind we had a lot of bullish demand news in grains this week, but what we found, especially after Wednesday, was that bullish demand news wasn't pushing markets higher and making new highs. We were actually selling off and going down on bullish demand news, and that's kind of a hallmark, along with weaker spreads, when the beans especially, kind of a hallmark that something is wrong. And I think it was those macro outside markets. Today was a great example of that as well. We got another early morning report of South Korean corn, Mexican corn, unknown slash we think Chinese beans reported on exports. Market was unable to turn that into gains because we had terrible jobs figures and productivity figures. And we saw the outside markets, namely the crude oil, sharply drop. And I think that's where this is the time period probably in the market, both today and this week, that we're going to have to really keep a close eye that we're at a point where we have to feed the demand bull because we're planting new crop, plus we have to feed the demand bull because we have the outside markets hurting us and starting to weigh on us, I think.
Yeah, nearly a $5 trading range in the crude oil at this point, and it's close to $4 lower, not quite that far, but approaching it again.
And I think the key is, and this is where I would say the corn and beans are starting to diverge themselves again, and I say that because of the spreads. If you look at the May-July spreads between corn and beans, you're talking about nearly a 50-cent spread between the soon-to-go-off-the-board May corn and July corn. So there's still an inversion there. And that says the demand is still very, very strong and the supplies are very, very tight. The exact opposite is what we saw over the course of the week here in the May, July beans. And it, today, especially in the corn, was very noteworthy because we saw what looked to be a good old-fashioned cash squeeze at the Gulf in the corn market because we saw the CIF-NOLA basis jump a dollar over May, something we haven't seen since June of last year. And keep in mind, in June of last year, that's when we were shutting down ethanol plants. That's when we were worried about getting enough corn planted and having such a tight supply and also squeezing the livestock producers. But we saw this May corn react to that CIF bid and jump over 20 cents and essentially take us off of technical sell signals across the board. We were hitting sell signals in corn, sell signals in beans, wheat, and even the S&P 500 was probably helped out by the agriculture and the commodity sector as a whole, excluding crude oil.
No, that's just Wicker wanting his charts to be right.
You know, one of the things we always want when we do analysis is that the fundamentals and the technicals match up, and very rarely do they match up. And so, but when they do, you put a lot more confidence in them than normal, and I think that's especially the case right now, and especially as we get through the majority of planting for corn in Illinois and Indiana, and we get it more heavily into the bean planting time period where you're building that next year's supplies.
Were you interested at all in the dollar? It's approaching 80 now.
Yeah, and this is where the dollar and the S&P 500, I mean, this is what probably the neatest feature about the markets, and when we talk about outside markets and the dollar, probably the neatest feature, the common denominator between the equities and the commodities is quantitative easing, and that represents itself in the dollar and in the gold price. And if you have bad economic data, the cycle of this market has been for the last 2 years to expect the Fed and the ECB and the Chinese Central Bank and all of the big banks of the world to jump in and smooth out the bad line, and by quantitative easing and pushing more money into the system, that's starting to not work as well again. And so that correlation between equities and commodities, that common denominator of quantitative easing, if the trade doesn't count on that and the dollar starts to go up and bonds start to go down and increase interest rates, that's something we've talked about for 2.5 years, that kind of stuff starts to happen, Todd. That's kind of the beginning of the end of one of the commodity cycles, I think. And so that's what we're kind of talking about here, is if we go into a double-dip global recession, which I think that likelihood is increasing as we see new economic data, that would then suggest we're probably not going to need a rally in gold because there's no inflation, and it probably suggests we're going to have the dollar go up because that's deflation as also.
If we do a double dip, led there by who?
Led there by the emerging markets in Europe. That's a great question, because up until these past 2 weeks, when we got the U.S. PMI, the unemployment data today, and some of this other U.S. economic data from the Chicago Fed and the Philadelphia Fed, we were thinking, the financial markets were thinking, the United States was healing up fast enough that we would be able to carry the water until the Europeans and the emerging markets came back on board. I think that's a very tough one to push now and suggest to me that we're going to have to take some risk off the table, and we're going to have to probably get a little bit more defensive, especially if that dollar does cross over the 50-day moving average and the S&P 500 and the crude oil and the copper. Another big thing that happened on this week's trade, maybe we'll talk more about it at Commodity Week with our guest, who's the South American professional, especially Mr. Cordonnier. But one thing I noticed in the Financial Times this week that's kind of a heads-up warning flag is that China, the biggest buyer of copper, is now looking to export copper. That's a real big flag about the global economy.
You said take some risk off the table. Are you going to do that for your clients as well?
If I get technical sell signals, you know, and at the middle part of today, I sent an email out to all the clients and subscribers and said, we're in it in terms of we're getting sell signals right now. We haven't gotten it yet. Be ready, and happily for the producer, I think, the corn led and the meal led the turnaround, and we didn't have the sell signal come about. But because we're in the planting window, because we are getting rains, and because we're seeing the outside markets weaken, if I do get technical sell signals, I really do have to follow through with them from a standpoint of being a good manager of those people's risk.
You're getting ready to make the trip here. One other thing I want you to do before you leave is to check up on Rabobank and Paula Savante. She's been on Commodity Week. She will be our guest as well tonight, so we have a kind of a pair. She's in Argentina. So she'll be able to discuss directly what's been happening there and how Rabo sees what's been happening in Argentina. So you might check them out on the web and see what you can come up with. And we'll talk to her and to you and to who else? Bill Mayer and P and Matt Bennett and, of course, Michael Cordonnier. We're looking forward to having you in studio for
Commodity Week. Sounds like one of the best shows of the year with that double powerhouse of guests. That'll be great for South America, because Cordonnier especially has been writing a lot about the about the crop going down, and it'll be interesting to see when that crop finally stops going down.
You bet. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
And head this way.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. That is Mike Zuzulow. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on this closing market report for a Friday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural futures market. You can always hear him again if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our daily agricultural programming, including the pre-opening, opening, and closing market report. Reports midday, too, at willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Well, Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, CME Group will start expanded electronic trading hours for grains and oilseed contracts on May 21st. The Minneapolis Grain Exchange and Kansas City Board of Trade both announced expanded trading hours as well. Effective May 20th, for trade starting May 21st, CME will have 22-hour trading on futures and options for corn, soybeans, wheat, soybean meal, and soybean oil, rough rice, and ethanol, as well as mini-sized corn, soybeans, and wheat. The open outcry or trading floor at CME Group will continue to trade those contracts from 9:30 a.m. to 1:15 p.m. Central Daylight Time Monday through Friday. California's consumer activists and organic food groups have submitted almost twice as many signatures as needed by the state to place a food label proposal on the November ballot. The California Ballot Initiative would require foods to carry a label if more than one-half of 1% of the product contains a genetically modified ingredient. The proposal exempts meat, dairy, foods, and beer. In the past year, lawmakers in about 20 states, including New York, Connecticut, and Vermont, have introduced bills that would require similar labeling rules, although none have become law. China's Ministry of Commerce today says that it will ask importers of distillers' dried grains to report information about shipments, expanding its monitoring of imports of agricultural commodities. Beginning on June 1st, importers of distillers' dried grains need to report information including volume, estimated time of arrival, and port details to the ministry. The Wheat Quality Council's Hard Red Winter Wheat Tour estimated Kansas average yield at 49.1 bushels to the acre. That's the tour's highest average yield in the last decade. The crop is about 3 weeks ahead of schedule and will be ready to harvest in 20 to 60 days. The Buenos Aires Cereals Exchange says prospects for Argentina's soy crop continue to dim and production is unlikely to top 41 million metric tons. The forecast is down 2 million metric tons from the exchange's estimate last week. About two-thirds of the harvest in Argentina is complete. China agreed today to let foreigners own bigger stakes in its securities firms and promised to limit export subsidies. The U.S. and China said they would start negotiations this summer on limits to export credits. China's billions of dollars in loans and other support to exporters have been criticized as anti-competitive subsidies. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm Yule by Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and of Commodity Week. That second program will air on many of our radio stations tomorrow, but we'll record it this afternoon at about 4:30. And by 5:30 to 6 o'clock this evening, it should be up on our website at willag.org. Matt Bennett, Bill Mayer, and Mike Zuzolo will be on hand as our panelists in studio, and Michael Cordonnier will be our guest. It's all part of Commodity Week, a weekly look at what happened at the world of agricultural markets. That's at willag.org. Now up next, you know, seeding rate studies for soybeans suggest a stand of, well, about 100,000 plants per acre should maximize yield. I'll have more in a moment from Emerson Nafziger.
Farmers should try to set their planters so that the stand of soybeans ends up at about 100,000 plants, says Emerson Nafziger from the University of Illinois.
Now, we certainly don't want to plant 110,000 seeds and hope that we get 90% of them to come up. More conservatively, I think 75% emergence is a good safe number. Usually it's better than that if we're planting into decent conditions. So people are in the 130, 140, 150,000 range generally, and I think that's about the right place to be.
The extension agronomist says there really isn't much point of going to 180, 190, or 200,000 seeds per acre planting rate.
It's sort of a false sense of security, you know, that we could lose half of them. Normally, when we have a big problem with soybean emergence, it's a really big problem, and we end up replanting it anyway. So putting out 20,000 or 30,000 more seeds at planting time doesn't really give us very much safety. the loss in stand from a 3-inch rainfall right after we plant is usually so bad that there's nothing much there to salvage. So I would keep that in mind as well.
The newer the planter, by the way, says Knapsiger, the more likely the stand will be good even at lower seeding rates.
And the fact that we're planting with good planter units now makes a difference as well. Drills generally don't provide quite as good an emergence percentage, and the row units that we're using do tend to increase emergence percentage. In terms of row spacing, it's been sort of interesting. I've spoken to farmers that said, oh, 30-inch rows for us yield just as much as 15-inch rows. And certainly there are cases when that happens. Over the last 2 years, we've done this comparison at sites around Illinois. On average, we've had about a bushel and a half higher yield with 15-inch rows than with 30-inch rows.
About half of the Illinois research sites show a positive response to 15-inch rows. The other half showed no response at all. It leads Knapsiger to lean towards 15-inch rows for soybeans.
30-inch rows is a good system for soybeans, but the 15-inch rows, which uses the same planter units, is also a very good system. I've been guilty in the past of describing 15-inch rows as the perfect row spacing for soybeans, and in many ways it is. You get to use a row unit to plant it, which gives you generally good even seed placement, and then you get rows that are narrow enough under almost all conditions. You'll maximize yields from row spacing as narrow as 15 inches.
Knapsiger says it's simply something to pencil in when purchasing a new planter, maybe bigger, and deciding whether or not to buy the split row units. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
And you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. On the phone line now to take a look at the agricultural cash grain markets, as he usually is on Friday afternoon, Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
If it's Friday, it must be Ludlow.
It is Friday and it is Ludlow. Let's start on the river because things are bouncing there big time. Tell me what's happening.
You're going to have to pass on me on that one. I am not up to speed on the river right now.
That's okay.
Well, let's go back. Partially, yes.
Well, I mean, nearby
basis numbers, we've got some export business going on. You have, maybe a squeeze going on in the May option, or maybe it's basis driving the squeeze on it. But we've got basis numbers, and that would be river and tributary to the river, kind of getting driven by some nearby demand. And that's really made all the difference in the world, where you're seeing the nearbys, mostly in corn, less in beans, being pushed with some really wild spreads on that May, July.
Right, and then in your own home front there and the rest of the elevators that belong to the co-op system, what is your basis done?
We have seen it improving. The rail numbers are right now running a little bit slower than what the CIF is, because you've got more flexibility and more paper trade out there in the rail rather than the physical with the trains.
And your expectations over the next 2 weeks as farmers get back into the field, maybe if the rain stops for a while?
Yeah. I mean, right now we've kind of crossed the too dry thing off of our list here in this area, and we're giving them some degree days. We'll be ready to go. We were split about evenly between planting beans and holding off before. No question now what happens next week when we can get back in.
Your bids for the day?
We are at 640 on nearby corn and 1467 on the soybeans.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. We'll be back in just a couple minutes when we'll take a complete look at the weather forecast. Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey will be here.
It's National Homebrew Day. It's also National Candied Orange Peel Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1494, Columbus landed at Jamaica and met Native Americans who used Jamaican pimento or allspice to season and smoke meat, usually pigs, the foundation upon which Jamaican jerk developed. In 1854, Asa Finch was appointed as New York State entomologist, the first such in the United States. He studied insects and their effects on agricultural crops. Finch helped define the role for the scientist in solving public problems such as crop damage caused by insects. His annual reports became standard reading for entomologists and agriculturalists. In 1874, Frank Conrad was born, an American electrical engineer. His interest in sound waves led to the establishment of the first commercial radio station. He coined the term broadcast for regularly scheduled programs. In 1942, wartime food rationing began in the U.S., and in 2003, the first cloned mule was born at the University of Idaho. Researchers cloned the mule named Idaho Gem using a cell from a mule fetus and an egg from a horse. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It's Friday. This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey on the phone line to look at the forecast for the weekend. In the state of Illinois, Jim, we've had quite a little bit of rainfall. How much and where, and then how fast will it dry out so producers can get back in the field?
That's right. You know, as your earlier callers were talking about, probably my biggest concern up until the weekend was the dry weather, especially in the central part of the state. We were down a couple inches on rainfall. You could see it in the soil moisture and stream flows, but we've gotten, just in the last week, some pretty good rains, about 1.5 to 3 inches or more across central and northern part of the state. It's been pretty dry, though, still in the southern part of the state, so they probably could use some more rains as we come up. And the good news is, for them anyway, is that there is more rain in the forecast pretty much across the board today and tomorrow and Sunday. We get about a 30-40% chance of rain through the area. So I don't see any like widespread rains at that point for the central Illinois. But by Monday, we might get another shot at some pretty good rains. So you look at the 3 and 4 day totals, it'll start to rack up a little bit. They've actually got the southern part of the state being a little drier over the next 4 or 5 days. I'm sorry, a little wetter over the next 4 or 5 days. I think here in central Illinois, it's going to be kind of hit and miss. I think it's going to be a lot of these kind of pop-up thunderstorms roll through. So there may be some fields that will be able to get in a little earlier than others, but nothing real widespread or organized, at least in the next 2 or 3 days. But I think the cumulative effect is it's going to stay pretty wet.
And so they'll stay out of the field then, probably?
I suspect so. I think there'll be some places they probably could sneak in between thunderstorms and get in there and do some work. But I think for the most part, it's going to be kind of slow going, at least through Monday. Now, get past Monday, it turns drier and a little cooler. And so I think the opportunities for field work will start to come into play, you know, by Tuesday or Wednesday.
And further out, do we get drier weather or more rainfall later next week?
You know, actually, the longer-term forecast, the 6 to 10-day and the 8 to 14-day forecast are right now calling towards, looking more towards below-normal temperatures and below-normal precipitation. So cooler and drier is the name of the game once we get past this weekend.
Anything else we need to discuss before I let you go for the afternoon?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Be sure to tune in for our agricultural programming called Commodity Week for the weekend. We'll record that at 4:30 this afternoon. Our panelists in studio will include Matt Bennett, Bill Mayer and Mike Zuzulo on the phone lines this afternoon from Argentina, Paula Zavante. She's with Rabobank Agrifinance, and then, of course, Dr. Michael Cordonier, and he is with Soybean and Corn Advisor. We'll post it there at willag.org by about 6 o'clock Central Time tonight. You have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow On Demand Bulk Soybean Handling System. Leonard Seed Service.